Okay, so this is somewhat, people that are gone will listen later, so I'm going to do just a fast review, because all of these, I think, stand alone, but I think they also run together. So hopefully this will make sense of why we do what we do tonight. So we're in this series that actually is about skepticism and doubt and uncertainty. Some of you have said, man, I'm just in a dry spot, or there's things I question, the things I'm not sure of. But I think tonight will hopefully help those of us who aren't in that season, that we're we're believing, we're going strong, but it'll help us look at, is our faith good? How good really is it? But that first week we came together and said, look, there's things that we don't know, and there's actually a good to not knowing. One of the goods is that it releases you to be fully and wonderfully human as God intended you to be, that there are things that are beyond you. There are not answers to every question. There is not a solving of every mystery, and that's actually what frees you to worship. Because part of being fully human is this reverent, childlike wonder with people, with everything that is around us. And the second week, we came in and said, there's actually some more gifts. There's some more comforts and consolation that is offered to us with uncertainty, with not knowing everything. One of them is the gift of humility, to know your place, to know your station in life. Like, we're called, the glory of being a human is to study and research and explore and know all that we can, and yet we hit the boundary marker. And so it gives us a certain humility. The second gift is the gift of learning and seeking after the truth. If God just downloaded everything onto you, there would be a complacency, right? So he creates this longing to keep going hard after him. And the last gift that we said was just the gift of growing. Some of the biggest growing times in life, right, are when you're waiting, of when you're uncertain. The scripture, I love how Eugene Peterson says that we are enlarged in the waiting. That's a beautiful picture. It's a beautiful picture of labor, God's labor as he's bringing forth new creation. And then last week we asked these really, I understand it probably stretched some of you, some far-fetched philosophical questions that probably in a normal given day you don't ask yourself. You probably don't wake up going, how do I know what I know? How do I know that the Bible is the revelation of God? Like, so we ask those questions, but in a given day, you just move forward. There's things that you know or things that you assume, and you have a practical amount of certainty, so you go forward. And what we sometimes don't realize, but that is shot through with faith at every level. What society likes to do is say, Christians are over here. These are people of faith. They believe in miracles, even though they don't always see them. They believe in transcendent, and they're people of faith. Over here are people of certainty, facts, knowledge, information, and science. And we said, that's bogus. None of us have 100% unquestionable, absolute certainty about anything, which means all of us have faith. So there isn't people of faith and people of science, there's people of faith. The best we can aspire to, right, is a relative amount of certainty, and if that's the case, then there's a relative amount of uncertainty, which actually leaves room for and requires faith. So there we go. So hopefully we leveled the playing field. That, I think that sermon, even though it was a lot of questions, is really important for the rest of the series, because you that are struggling with doubt, it's not like, well, I'm torn between science and faith. No, you are a person of faith. The question we're now asking is your faith good or bad? Does your faith leave you stagnant, or does it leave you joyful and exploring and becoming better? So, last week, we entered with that level playing field. All of us are people of faith. So it seems to me that faith is a needed thing, right? I mean, to be a human, to live life in this world, it's a needed thing. Maybe even a good thing. But why would anybody want to reject faith then? Like, a big sentiment in our society is this. You'll hear people say this. It doesn't matter what you believe as long as you're sincere. And you always have to ask the question behind the question. Because I think what a lot of people are saying, I don't think you take them at face value. Because would you say it doesn't matter what you believe if you're a white supremacist? No, it kind of matters what you believe. See? But I think what a lot of people are saying is, I don't want to debate the minutiae of all the different aspects of different religions. I think as long as you're a good person and you're sincere and you make the world better, it really doesn't matter what you believe. And then some people would say, I'm rejecting faith. And I think, well, we don't take them literally, because really a lot of times what they're rejecting is bad faith, right? So the operating system that they inherited, maybe as a kid, they grew up in a certain church or a certain religion, and they grew up with certain parents that looked at the world a certain way, and they're saying, this operating system that I inherited doesn't work for me anymore. Or this operating system that I downloaded when I chose this religion, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't seem to account for the data in real life. I say that this worldview that I have, this way of organizing the world, it made sense philosophically up front and I bought into it. But now as I'm out here in the real world doing these things, the religion doesn't seem to connect with that. Or somebody might say, I look at this religion and its followers don't seem to become better people for believing this. So for many reasons, people reject faith, meaning they are discarding their version of faith. They're discarding their worldview, their way that they currently organize and understand things. They're getting rid of that. Here's our question. Does the baby have to be thrown out with the bathwater? I would say this. Is the opposite of bad religion isn't no religion, it's good religion. People sometimes forget that. The opposite isn't, well, just can all this stuff. It's doing it well. Or to use another phrase, do you have to jump from the frying pan into the fire? Are there more than two alternatives? Like if you've got a bad faith and it's not working for you and it doesn't make sense and this thing that you've inherited since a child doesn't account for what's happened, is the only other option just to can it and say that's it? Or there are other options? So does this make sense? If we're all on a level playing field, this is hopefully you can talk with people in the world like this. If we're all on a level playing field, if we can get people to agree there that we are all people of faith, we don't have certainty, so we all have different levels of faith, and if we're at that level playing field, now the next question is the faith that you hold good? Does it evolve? Does it grow? Does it make you a better person? Does it make you alive? Or is it stagnant, decaying, just something you inherit, something that really doesn't change your life? I would love to sit down with people. That's a great question, is how would you describe bad faith? Let's look at a couple bad faith descriptors. Now, I don't know what, there it is. Here's some. I would say, so this is just me talking, bad faith is based on unquestioned authority. In other words, I simply believe because an authority figure or a structure or a church said so. I haven't thought through it myself. I don't really question things. I just thoughtlessly believe whatever I'm told to believe. Now, here's the thing. If somebody said that, they might be really lucky and they follow the one right authority structure. Like, you follow the one church, the one denomination, the one teacher that is closest to reality. But think of, what about all the poor folk who blindly follow authority structures that direct them to believe wrongly? You see? Now, this generation does the opposite. They say, to hooey with authority figures and structures and organized religion. I always ask, what's the opposite of organized religion? Disorganized religion? You know? So authority figures, structures, organizations, churches, they can be great help in nurturing and developing good faith. But the point is, you can't just blindly, mindlessly follow the herd if you want to have good faith. Right? We can agree with that, I think. I'm moving forward whether you agree with me or not. Another one, we say bad faith appeals to self-interest and base motive. So there are actually stories of missionaries paying people to come to their Bible studies, paying people to come to their church. There are religious groups that use young women to attract male members to the group. And that might, we say those are far-fetched stories, but think in our own country, there are groups that promise health and wealth. There are groups who promise pain avoidance. Evangelicals for years have offered easy solutions to all of life's problems. Jesus is the answer to it. The Bible has all the answers, does it? Remember the used car salesman last week? See, I doubt God would be impressed with those who believe in order to become rich or healed or comfortable, or lazy, with no desire, like no authentic desire for the good, the true, the beautiful. So we'd say that's bad faith. So we would say bad faith is arrogant and unteachable, right? Like when people take pride in feeling that they're right and they reward themselves with a sense of superiority. I mean, think of that. When your faith allows you to take this high and mighty posture that looks down in judgment on others, it's hard to feel like we're dealing with good faith, right? The know-it-all spiritual attitude, that pretend certainty that always talks, but never listens, that obnoxious, you can't teach me anything that I don't already know spirit. We would say that's ugly. That isn't characteristics of somebody that has good faith. We could say bad faith is dishonest. Like, there are ways of appearing faithful and like you're a loyal follower of a group, like, hey, I'm with this group, but yet and still lack integrity. If your group says people of one race are better than people in another race, and you know people of this other race to be good and kind and true, then if you stay with this group, do you see it's incongruent? There's ways that we can just kind of sit back and kind of parrot back the party line. How many times have you seen where you've witnessed corruption in a religious organization but continue to publicly uphold it as pure? See, is that good faith? How can a God of truth be pleased with me saying things I don't really believe or mean? We'd say a couple more. Bad faith is apathetic, right? Real faith seems to inspire action from people. If your faith doesn't produce any action in your life, then we couldn't call it good faith. Like, think of this for some people. If my faith makes absolutely no difference, like if I would do what I did even without my faith, then we would have to say, well, that's bad faith if it's faith at all. And we know this. Sometimes people substitute the active life for the contemplative life. So they say, well, I'm contemplative. They think about terminology and facts and doctrine and theology and opinions. It's kind of the religious esoteric stuff, but it doesn't show up in their life. And when that's the case, then you're positioned well to win at religious trivial pursuit, but that's it. Which our group is probably pretty good at since we won the night of the baseball. So yeah, we might be good at trivia, but after a while, who's fooled by a barrage of words except just the talker himself? So, bad faith, and here's one of the last ones, is we could say a step backward. If I'm overwhelmed by what's happening in the world, if I'm overwhelmed by advances in science and technology, if I'm overwhelmed by the complexities in ethics, by gray areas in my own life, and I just throw myself into a religion that tells me what I want to hear, tells me easy answers, and I don't have to think for myself, then my religion, my religiosity is an excuse for laziness and fear, right? Not courage and growth. Jesus says, good faith ought to produce good fruit. I ought to become a better person because of the faith that I hold. A faith that makes me less loving, less mature, less wise, less alive, and responsible in the world sounds a lot like bad faith, right? Would you agree with that? Okay, so here's just a few more. I just listed them. I would say bad faith engages in self-righteous judgment of others. See, that's what I'm saying. This isn't just for people who might be doubt and going through a hard time. This is good for us to go, huh, have I developed some bad faith habits? You know, self-righteous judgment of others. Wow, religion's good at that. Expresses a chronic spirit of negativity. Man, how many Christians do you know that, man, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. Every time you talk to them, this is bad, this is bad, this group is... And Paul says, what should usually come out of your mouth is what? Gratitude. Bad faith breeds what we just, like what the speaker in the video said, it breeds certainty. I'm right. I've got the right information. I've read the right books. I've heard the right authors. I go to the right church. And it kind of has intolerance for anybody else that might think differently. So would you agree? I would say those are bad faith. There's probably many more, and that's what I mean. It'd be a great discussion with people. How would you define bad faith? Because sometimes when people say they're rejecting faith, they're rejecting bad faith. A bad version that they need to shed, like an old snakeskin. And they need something new to emerge. Which hopefully encourages some of you, because some of you have told me, man, I feel bad. I feel like I had stuff figured out, and now after being here, I don't know anything anymore. Good. It should always be that way. The moment you get comfortable, something's probably pretty wrong. There's things that got to shed. Now, so what are, those are bad faith descriptors. What would we say? So we tore it down. Now let's rebuild the structure. What does good faith look like? I would definitely say good faith is humble, teachable, and inquisitive. I mean, doesn't that make sense? If what we said is right, if we're aware of how limited our knowledge actually is, then how can I be proud of what I do know? That doesn't make any sense. How can I look on down on somebody who knows less? Wouldn't we agree that pride, which is that kind of certainty that I'm right, I don't need to listen or learn from anybody, isn't that the greatest possible barrier to faith? Yeah. You know? It seems like good faith begins like this: humbling yourself before God, acknowledging our ignorance, and asking God for guidance and enlightenment. That seems like a good place to start. And when you do that, when we are appropriately humble, I think you'll find this: anyone and anything can become your teacher. So a bad circumstance doesn't have to be an obstacle. Suddenly it's an opportunity because it teaches you something. A child can teach you. A mental patient that you work with can teach you. A wise sage that you sit with, a comedian, anybody. Because we would say childlike inquisitiveness seems to be a characteristic of good faith. Here's another one. We would say good faith is grateful, right? Should I not be grateful of what I have learned along this journey, this one life that I have, what I've learned, should I be grateful for? I mean, if there were only a few basic things: God exists, God loves you, God calls you to love what he loves. If that's it, if that were the few basic things, then even that is very precious and I think worthy of celebration. And if I can't claim to comprehend and know and fully understand and grasp everything, I can say there are some things, though, that I've apprehended. There's some things that I've come into contact with, and I've touched them, and I've begun to experience them. And rather than being puffed up then by knowledge, shouldn't I be grateful to God and others for what I have learned along the way? And in church, being sure not to close myself off to further knowledge. That part's really the important clause, parentheses there. I'm grateful for what I know, but also I'm going to be careful not to close myself off to what else I have to learn. We would say this: I think good faith is honest. Shouldn't I feel free to be as accurate as I can about what I'm relatively sure about and what I'm relatively not sure about, right? Shouldn't good faith look like this, that we feel free to express doubt at times and confidence, not overstating but not understating our level of certainty? Shouldn't in the church we hate, like abhor dishonesty because that clouds that already difficult search for truth? I think we should. Should we acknowledge and remove our own blind spots before critiquing others about theirs? That's honest. Shouldn't I be honest about the weaknesses in myself, in my faith community, in my understanding of things, in my tradition even, the weaknesses sometimes of the church, because I want others to be honest about theirs, right? So I think it's both. I think we would agree with this. Hopefully you do. You're here. Good faith is communal. Your individual understanding of things is very limited, right? My understanding of things is limited, so don't I need connection with a group of trusted companions who can help and encourage me in our common search for faith and God and what is truth? Don't we sometimes need a faith community who will gently confront us if they see us losing those qualities of what good faith is? Now, this will bother some of you. Shouldn't we have humble dialogue with other groups, with other religions, with other ideologies, other political parties, other denominations and so forth, because they see things that we're missing, right? And vice versa. I think that would look like good faith. A couple more. Good faith is active. If I begin to understand what I believe to be the truth, am I not obligated to live by it? And wouldn't I want to put off apathy, which is not acting on my beliefs, and also put away hypocrisy, which is acting contrary to my beliefs? And I would want to put those things away like I would want to put away dishonesty. Here's what I think happens in the church. Shouldn't my pursuit of truth be hot, suggesting that I hunger and thirst for more truth rather than become complacent of what I believe I've already found? There's, I think, the problem in church. This is why you could yawn. Nobody did. I'm not picking on anybody. Nobody. This is why you can yawn during How Great Is Our God, because after a while, I grew up in church, and I went to Sunday school, and I've heard this passage preached before, and yeah, I know the story of the Bible, and I've read some theological things, and it's like, we become very complete. Like, I get it. And the preacher's job sometimes is, you don't. Because the goal isn't to get it. If you think you get it, you've missed it. Like, Jesus wanted to keep you hot on the trail. So I think that's a problem with church. Wouldn't this be true? If I believe that this search for truth in God is important, shouldn't I try to influence others? You know, the world, stop the evangelizing. Well, wait a minute. If I'm open, if there's people in my life who are open to my influence, I don't mean just stand on the street with a sign. I'm not sure that does much. But people who are open to your influence, they know you, they've been around you, there's respect held there. Shouldn't I help them and encourage them to take step forwards in their own search? Not with manipulation and coercion, but that would be good faith. Here's the last one on this. Good faith, wouldn't we be honest and say it's difficult? How much is an easy, untested faith worth? You know? If faith brings me, and some people preach this way, if faith brings me all benefits and no cost, how can we be sure that our belief is in this honest pursuit of truth and goodness instead of a pursuit of benefits? See? If my faith always gained me respect and compliments and never rejection and misunderstanding, might I be just a believer out of social convenience? My faith might feel really strong today. Like, we sang some good songs about God, so my faith feels really strong tonight, but how will it fare under tomorrow's tragedy or depression or disappointment or delay? Is faith that doesn't cost me anything worth anything? Is a faith that is it any good if it doesn't challenge me to do good and challenge me to come better even when I don't feel like it? That seems like good faith. And I just made a list of a couple. I would say good faith prioritizes love. Yeah. Do you see how this is good for all of us? This isn't just like a series about those who are going through a dry time in doubt. Good faith prioritizes love. Is that what we have? Good faith, I mean, is honest and sincere with things going wrong in the world, but hopefully, I mean, you believe somebody actually defeated death and might be bringing about a new world. So at the end of the day, people shouldn't say you're a pessimist. I've gotten that before. Yeah, you're kind of a pessimist. No, I believe in new creation. I'm pretty optimistic. And look at the news that it's coming out of this. I'm pretty optimistic. I think good faith keeps an open mind. I'll leave that there. It didn't get much of a response for you, so I'll just leave. It's like a comedian. I got to move from this joke. I would say good faith practices forgiveness. It's a place where people are being reconciled and brought together, not a place of turmoil and chaos constantly. Okay, so last thing, you've done well. Last thing is this. I don't know if this will stretch you or not, but, you know, let's think for a moment. So here's a little chart I want you to see, and then I want to pray, and they didn't even know it, over Bruth. That's your new name, Bruth. Broseph, Bruce, Bruth, and Liesl. They're working on something. Bruth. Man, well, there's your new name from here on out. Bruth, I kind of like it. It's apostolic sounding, you know? Bruce works with the, he works with the Center of Interfaith with other groups. And one of the things that they're planning on, there is a something downtown, and why did I just lose the name? Festival of Faith downtown. And what it is people that are seeking and looking, there's like booths of these different faiths, and people talk about it. Well, he went down last year, and it's like there's no church there. Yeah, there's absolutely no church represented there. Some of that's because, well, I'd have to have a booth right next to a Hindu. Well, right, but Bruce said it'd be like Paul walking to Athens saying, "Oh, I'm not going to say anything here." You know, there's idolatry about. Instead of Paul walking in and going, "No, it's good that you're religious. I see it. Let me tell you something," you know? So they're working on having a booth. And so this next part is to help all of us. You say, whoa, wait a minute, that's far out. Okay, hold on. This will make complete sense of everything, right? Yeah. I bring it all together for you? Okay, so sometimes people say, like we said at the beginning, it doesn't matter what you believe as long as you're sincere. Or this is a big one, and don't all paths just lead to God. Like as long as you're religious and you're searching for the good and beautiful, you know, doesn't it lead to God? Okay, you look up there. Imagine circle A represents the ultimately true religion, possessing all truth, no falsehood, everything that there is to know about God and life and the universe in pure form, circle A. Now, wouldn't you agree that if anybody claims to have that religion, in other words, anybody claims to have captured the whole truth perfectly in their own mind, I think we're justified at laughing at them and walking off. Okay? Now, so let's say these other circles represent various religions. So Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, whatever you might think. Or we could even say this. They could be individual versions of one religion, right? So Christianity, you talk to a Presbyterian, you talk to a Baptist, you talk to a Catholic, Orthodox, you're going to get different approaches to what is really the truth. No two of us exactly have the same thought process. Now look at that. As we would expect, each circle covers some truth, right? But not all of it. And each of them have some misunderstanding, some misconceptions, some falsehood. You look on that chart, there's some overlap on some of them where they agree, but we would have to be honest and say some of them are also miles apart. We're not saying, no, there are significant differences. And based on if you believe them, the world's going to look different, right? If people of this group believe this way, the world's going to look different than people of this group believing this way. So there's overlap. We're not going to deny that, but there's also significant difference. I would say this. Clearly, each circle has something to offer, something to learn, a worldview, a perspective that certain people hold, and it's valuable to understand that. So wouldn't we agree, in light of this, saying each religion is equally valid doesn't seem right to me, right? I wouldn't say they're equally valid, but we could say each one of them has value. Each one of them has a viewpoint that can challenge and enrich ours, and hopefully that viewpoint can be challenged and enriched by others. I have to be honest, as a pastor, and I don't hear a lot of radio people saying this, I'm glad we live in a pluralistic society. I'm glad there's people of other religions. I love that we live in a religious, diverse marketplace, and all those come together, and they can pass out their literature, and they can have their holy books, and we can debate and know each other and interact. It's right there in the open. See? I'm okay with that. But no circle, right, comprehends or contains all the truth. Meaning there is no human mind, there's no church, there's no system of thought out there that sees it all and gets it all and grasps it all. So the last thing that I would say to us or to anybody is to have good faith. I would say to you there's a difference between having faith in my circle, in my church, in my religion, and faith in the big circle that is admittedly beyond me. Right? That's part of good faith, to say, I don't have it all. Now, hear me out. There is a very significant difference between having faith in my religion, my tradition, my church, my background, how I currently understand the world. Right? So my circle, my belief system, my theology, my current understanding of things. There's a difference between that and faith in God's religion, let's say, God's truth. The whole truth and nothing but the truth. How God sees it and how God knows it. Now, we'll say to people, and I say this till there's no breath, that good faith has no choice but to define itself, to be a circle. Like, you live in this place and in this time, and we have to say, you know what? We're Christians. We believe in Christianity. We have this tradition. We're in this neighborhood and this place, and we think this way, and so we gather. You have no choice but to define yourself. Everybody has to choose something. There's paths laid out in front of you, and you have to choose. You can't just stay stagnant. You have to choose what path, what leader, what teacher, how you're going to think, how it affects the world. You have no choice but to define itself in some way. All I'm saying is, as Christians, we have to define ourselves with humility. with tentativeness, with this openness to correction. Even more, I would say like a child, curiosity and hunger for instruction and growth and learning and realize there's more out there. There's more to learn. There's more to know. I think that's what Jesus was referring to when he spoke of people's need to have faith like a child. Be like a child. There's no end. Why? Are we almost there? Jesus says, be like that. Have that kind of wide open curiosity. In your faith tradition, don't take yourself too seriously because you have to remain open to ongoing expansion and adjustment and movement so that you will become, and here is our goal, more and more in sync with that big circle of truth. But honesty says, see, I think Christians too often think, well, we're A. And it's like, no. Now, you might have much more of A because you're starting with Jesus, who is a person who is the truth, than somebody else down the road. But to think that you have A is, wow, you know? And that's what the world responds to sometimes. Really? You fit Jesus? You have all the Bible has all the answers? See, and sometimes that's what people are rejecting. And our goal is we tell people, no, we want to be in relationship with the God and live in union with him who draws us ever more in union with that big circle. But no, we don't have it figured out. We believe Jesus has it figured out. And we're going to try to follow what he has given us, but we're certainly not circle A. Does that make sense? You're not scared that I'm losing the faith, right? Okay? That makes sense. I thought it would.